And our special guest, Dr. Paul Thomas, the big question, should you or should you not get your child vaccinated, or should you even get vaccinated? That's one of the things we're talking about. We'll take your phone calls as well when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Dr. Paul Thomas with us. Paul, we were talking about the scenario, of course, of a young child who has cancer, and the parents decide they don't want chemo, they don't want radiation treatment for their child, they're going to go natural, and the state, of course, steps in, sues them, and, you know, forces them to undergo chemotherapy. How do you handle that?
Wow, you want to give me the toughest one yet.
Yes, sir.
So I was a doctor in a hospital when I had to take care of a child with meningitis, and the family didn't want to treat that child, which would have been a definite death sentence. And I recall, I was in training at the time. We got a court order, and we treated that kid, and the kid was fine. That seemed pretty straightforward, just because, you know, there was very little negative to using antibiotics to treat meningitis. I mean, you don't do it, you're dead within days. You do it, you've got a great chance of survival and even being completely normal. The cancer one becomes complicated because the chemotherapy and the radiation can have such horrendous side effects that you can be left damaged permanently. You can die in the process. So there's a much more complicated risk-benefit analysis, and I think the family should have some say rather than just across the board, the state takes over and you have no rights. It's an ethical challenge.
Oh, it's horrible.
It is, and I think I see problems with, just sort of alienating parents and just taking over, because so many of those cancer kids end up, you know, they're terminal and dying in the hospital, alienated from their support systems. That's just horrendous.
But, you know, if I were the parent, Paul, I would do both. I would do the conventional treatment because it has worked in the past for some.
Right.
You can't say that it doesn't. So I would do that, but I would also do as much natural as I could get my hands on.
I absolutely agree. I've often wondered what, because I'm very much into natural healing, but cancer's the tough one because for many of the cancers, the chemotherapy can work. And so to walk away from that is, and just trying to rely on natural once cancer's taken hold is very, very dangerous.
Isn't that what happened to Steve Jobs from Apple Computer?
I've heard that. I don't know his details for sure, but I have heard that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we went natural. We're going to take phone calls with you as well and much more to talk with you about. Where do we get your books, by the way, The Vaccine Friendly Plan?
Anywhere books are sold.
Super. Okay, let's go to Mike in Wyoming to get us started here. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you doing
tonight? Good, Mike. Thank you.
Bear with me. I've got this nasty cold.
All right. It's going all over the place.
The thing I wanted to bring up is that I'm a chronic pain patient, and I've been on opioids for a very long time, and they've worked well for me. But since the government decided to make this big pushback against opioids, they've cut my medications back probably three-fourths of what I was taking.
And do you feel that you feel the difference?
Yeah, I'm in total misery.
Oh, boy. Now, do you think you were addicted to them?
No, because, I never shopped for extras. I never had to go to the ER because I overdosed on them or anything. I took what they gave me, and it worked well.
And Michael, this is Dr. Paul. What is your pain source? Where are you in pain, and what? Why?
Well, I've had 7 back surgeries. My whole lumbar spine is fused.
Yep.
I've had combined 8 surgeries on my knees, and I've got some neck problems that are really causing me some misery.
Gosh. Can I ask how old you are?
Pardon me?
How old are you, Michael?
I'm 68.
Okay. So I'm an addiction specialist, but I also deal with a lot of folks who have chronic pain. And for the younger folks who aren't quite as beat up as you are, I'm able to help them as we reduce their opioids. You actually down-regulate pain receptors, and a lot of times they actually have less pain. But in your situation, with as many surgeries as you've had and the kinds of surgeries you've had, you just need relief. And so my heart goes out to you, and I feel for you. And, you know, opioids are generally amazing for acute pain, for severe pain. They're not great for chronic pain, but in your situation, they're probably the best tool you've got.
What about cannabis, Dr. Paul?
It's Michael, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for Michael, I think that's a reasonable option. You can do high-dose CBD. You can do CBD with THC, depending on what state you're in, of course. I'm in Oregon where it's legal.
He's in Wyoming.
Yeah, I don't know what the state of marijuana is in use in Wyoming. But, you know, I would say do everything you can to add other sources of pain relief, whether it's massage, acupuncture.
Mm-hmm. To minimize the opioids.
Yep. And then, you know, you're probably going to have opioids because you've just had so much hardware put in you. It's tough. Yeah, you've got a tough situation, and I really feel for you.
And those of us, Dr. Paul, who are not in chronic pain probably don't understand what people like Mike are going through.
Oh, you know, absolutely. When you're in severe pain, it's actually, it's, whether it's emotional pain or physical pain, it can be so unbearable you start wondering if you can keep going. Right. I mean, so we have a suicide rate in this country that's just horrible. 45,000 Americans in 2016. And Mike, just hang in there, and I hope you don't have to go that route. I hope you can find some relief. You know, don't give up.
Well, you know, you brought up something interesting too, Dr. Paul. You know, a lot of people have severe anxiety. So they take Xanax and Valium and pills like that, the benzos.
Yeah.
And then when you read the description of some of the side effects, it says suicidal tendencies.
Well, the combination of benzos and opioids is a death sentence. You have to be so careful with those two because it just shuts off your respiratory center in your brain. So if you just overdo it a little bit, when you're in pain, you're just trying to get relief. So, you know, if a little bit's not enough, you take a little more. But if you've mixed benzos and opiates, you might just stop breathing.
That's a fatal combination, isn't
it? That's a fatal combination.
And what if you're drinking at the same time?
That can also be a problem. And then just not keeping track of how much you've taken if you're inebriated in any way.
Let's go to Jan in Brooklyn, New York. Hello, Jan. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Jan.
I have two things.
All right.
Look, you mentioned when you got the same chicken pox, I think you didn't get the shingles. Now, isn't it true that if you get these childhood diseases, they prevent getting serious things happening to you? And the other question I have is, I think it's absolutely horrendous how they don't allow people to sue if the vaccinations hurt them. There's a court I know they get money from, but they can't get a lot of money. And I think that's why all these vaccination manufacturers, they go crazy.
They had a great lobby, Jan. They had a great lobby indeed. But let's talk about our first question, Paul, and that is when you have these childhood diseases, of course it helps you down the line, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you know, it's interesting. We now know the hygiene hypothesis that if you play in dirt and you're living on a farm and you're around animals, you're going to have less allergies. Your immune system is actually trained by the exposures to different infectious agents and to dirt. And so there's value in having exercised your immune system. This world today where everything's sterile and then you're doing all these vaccines, it actually is triggering more allergies and autoimmune problems, we know that people who had measles naturally actually were protected against certain cancers. So, Jan, you bring up a very good point, and I absolutely agree with you. The Childhood Vaccine Act, to try to compensate people through that mechanism, was set up initially, I think, with good intentions, but it has totally backfired. It needs to be abandoned, and we need to hold people liable for vaccine damage so people can get compensated.
Yep. What do you think of the CDC? Are they working on our behalf?
or the FDA for food and drugs no. The CDC is clearly conflicted. I mean, there are certain things they do fairly well as far as tracking diseases, but if you even look at their mission statement, it's all about preventing diseases for which we have vaccines. And so their whole focus is distorted towards vaccines are safe and effective, vaccines are the solution, and what they really should be doing is looking at population health. What we don't have is a single study, not one, that compares the entire vaccine schedule with placebo or no vaccines, right? And I just happen to have, because I acquire patients in Portland, Oregon, who won't vaccinate, and in Oregon, you have the right to choose. So I have to actually have a natural population of unvaccinated patients, over 1,000, and their outcomes are so amazing. I mean, they are the healthiest kids. There's way less autism, way less chronic disease, way less illness in general. It's just astounding. But, you know, that's why I set up FOI, the Pediatric Health Outcomes Initiative, to fund a prospective registry. It's you can't study vaccines ethically. You can't randomize people and say, well, we're not going to vaccinate you, and we are going to vaccinate you. That's not ethical. But in my opinion, it would be unethical for me not to look at the outcomes I'm getting in my practice, because I'm sitting on this population of unvaccinated and partially vaccinated as well.
Do you give vaccines in your practice?
Oh, absolutely.
You do.
Day.
Okay. Do you ever, or have you ever been giving a vaccine and you think to yourself, God, I hope this isn't the one?
So back in, I finished my training in 1988. And at that time we used to give the DPT. It was a whole cell pertussis vaccine. It was a horrendous vaccine. So many seizures and quite a lot of deaths from that vaccine. And I think that was one of the vaccines that triggered actually creating that fund, the Childhood Immunization Act, because there was just so much harm being created by that vaccine. I absolutely, every time I ordered that vaccine, I was just hoping that, you know, it wasn't going to be one of my kids that had a horrible outcome. I actually sometimes still feel that way, and I mostly feel it now when I hear, I'll be in my office, for example, doing some charting on my computer, and I'll hear a kid just screaming, no, I don't want a vaccine, you know, and they're just throwing a fit, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, what if there's a karma thing here? It's just like...
Yeah. I think in that case, he just doesn't want to get jabbed by a needle.
Well, of course. And you know, I mean, if your child's dying of meningitis, you give them antibiotics whether they like it or not. But somehow with vaccines, because there can be negative, you know, outcomes, you can have bad outcomes. It's like, that one bugs me a bit.
What gauge needle do you use for babies?
Oh, golly, that's a great question. My nurses give the vaccines. I think it's a 21 gauge.
Because 20, the higher the gauge, the thinner the needle.
Right, right. So a tiny needle would be like a 25 gauge. They make them as small as 27. But I think the vaccines usually are going through a 23, maybe for newborns and babies it's 23 gauge. It's either a 23 or a 21.
Next up, let's go to Julie in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hi, Julie.
Hi, George. Dr. Thomas, I have a couple questions about the connection between shingles and chickenpox.
Sure.
Okay. So 8 weeks, or last summer I had shingles for 8 weeks, and for 8 weeks I was in hell, and had to have it debrided every week.
Oh, boy.
So, number one, do you believe in the new two-shot shingle booster? If I did get the booster, can I get it again? And you spoke about death from shingles. What is the cause of death from shingles? Thank you.
Well, it's probably the it's mostly going to be in the very elderly, and when their immune system is compromised, it is a virus that can end up causing, you know, blood infection, pneumonia, that kind of thing. You're not going to die from the skin outbreak. It's going to get into your entire system.
Paul, when you started really being a proponent for, you know, educating people about this, was there one specific case that got you to start doing this?
It was my fourth case in 4 years. When at the beginning of the show I was mentioning in 2004.
The synchronicities, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like by the time that I walked in, it was November of 2007, and I walked into what was supposed to be a well 2-year-old visit, and this little guy was sitting in one of those little fold up push strollers, his back to the window, and he's facing me, and I always interact with the kid. I mean, I'm a pediatrician. I love kids. I go in and I just make fun and I get them smiling, and I couldn't get this kid to interact with me. And he was like gone. And it was like, it was just heartbreaking because I had seen him at a year and he was fine. He had seen one of my nurse practitioners at 18 months. So I went into the electronic chart real quick and was like, yep, he was normal at 18 months. It's like, wow. And it was just like, okay, I can't keep doing this. So that was kind of what woke me up finally. I mean, I was already kind of waking up to the fact that we were seeing some adverse outcomes. And, of course, you can't say for sure it's vaccines until we get the proper study, right? I mean, I've got enough data in my practice now that there's no doubt. And, of course, we had the William Thompson stuff. We've got the Andrew Zimmerman stuff. So, I mean, there are enough of us who know that it is an issue. Vaccines are part of the problem. And I'm not saying we throw out all vaccines and go back to, you know, all those childhood diseases. That's not at all what I'm saying. I just think we need to be better at identifying who's at risk for vaccine harm. And then those of us who are blessed with strong family histories, we don't have problems with autism, developmental delays, severe autoimmunity or immunodeficiencies. You know, if you've got a robust family history with no problems, you can probably do vaccines rather safely compared to others.
That's true. Do you ever dress up like Patch Adams with a big red nose or anything like that for the kids?
Oh, no, I haven't done the nose thing, but you'll usually see me in a Hawaiian shirt, and I'm usually pretty goofy, and then yeah, Halloween I'll do something.
I was at an event at a health show a couple of years ago, and Patch Adams was there, and what a neat guy, though. Absolutely neat guy.
Yeah, he seems to be.
And Robin Williams, the late Robin Williams, played him.
Yep. Yep. I love Robin Williams. He was.
That's somebody who had demons too.
Oh, he was one of us with the addiction thing. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think so. Dr. Paul Thomas with us. His website, drpaul.md, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. If you could wave a magic wand and cure one thing or stop one thing, what would that be? Just one.
Oh, my Lord. I've never been asked that question. I want people to be free to choose how they live their lives. And, you know, so that would be my magic wand is to remove government intervention and, you know, get people. Really what we need is to go back to eating real food.
Well, that's a big, big plus, too. It really is. Doctor, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls as we talk about yourself. Next hour, we'll talk about premonitions, sensing the future. Rob and Trish McGregor join us here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Dr. Paul Thomas with us and your calls, our final segment here. Paul, you are not opposed to vaccines in total, are you?
No, not at all.
The MMR vaccine, why don't they just give it to people, you know, the little kids individually rather than bulk them together?
Well, that's a great question. You might have heard the name Andrew Wakefield. He was.
Oh, yeah.
He was famous for his article back in, I think it was 1998, 1999. He was studying autistic kids who had GI problems, and he made the mistake of saying there might be a link. We ought to study this some more.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up lost his license over that. challenging the system. But his proposal was, why don't we give these separately? It might be safer. I actually did that for 4 years, and it was those same 4 years that I had those autism cases when I was at my old practice.
Right.
So I did not get the sense that it was actually any safer to split them up, just to be frank. But, you know, we don't really know. But as of 2009 in this country, you can't buy it separated out. They stopped making it available to us to order that way.
Okay, you have to get them with the three, though.
You have to do all three, which is unfortunate because sometimes you've got a patient who is totally immune to measles and rubella but just needs a mumps booster. And I think it would be safer just to give them a mumps booster if that's what they needed. Or say you've got a young lady who's entering that age group where you can get pregnant, it's real important to have rubella protection. Why not just do a rubella vaccine instead of all three if you don't really need the others? So I do wish they would bring that back for those reasons, but it's just not available. I think it's just money and politics.
You know, on the record, the CDC says there is no link between the vaccines and autism. But let me ask you this, Paul. If this shot, the MMR, contributes to being autistic, what part of the shot, the vaccine, do you think is contributing to that? Is that a fair question?
It's a great question. I have a theory. You know, what we know is that when we inject aluminum, now the MMR doesn't have aluminum, so some people get confused about that.
Okay.
But newborns are given the hepatitis B vaccine at birth, at 2 months, at 6 months. We give, and that has aluminum, a lot of aluminum, 250 micrograms. The Prevnar has aluminum. The Tdap has aluminum. At a year, they're giving the hepatitis A, that has aluminum. So kids are loaded up with aluminum-containing vaccines many, many times. Prior to getting the MMR. And when you inject aluminum, think of nanoparticles, little pieces of metal. They're too large to dissolve. It's a metal.
Mm-hmm.
But they're small enough that our immune system, our white blood cells, think of a Pac-Man, will gobble up these little pieces of aluminum and then carry them like a Trojan horse all around the body. So this gets aluminum deposited in our brains. We know that from autopsy studies that aluminum gets deposited in kidneys, brain, bone. And the half-life of the deposited aluminum is, in one study, 7 years. So all these shots are piling up this toxic metal that has no biological function. And then you give the MMR, three live viruses, which are known to cause encephalitis or inflammation in the brain. And I think, now this is where this part's my theory, you're pouring gas on a fire. So you've got all this aluminum that got into the brain through the white blood cells, the macrophages, and then you cause inflammation, which causes a massive release and more gobbling up of aluminum. Because white blood cells just last 4 to 6 months. When they die, what happens to that aluminum that was inside them? Well, it's released again. So now it's causing mischief in the brain, in the case of my example. So that's my best guess as to why the MMR in particular is maybe more problematic today than perhaps it was when it was first introduced.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. Gordon in Plant City, Florida. Welcome back, Gordon. Go ahead.
Yeah, George, Dr. Paul, thanks for taking my call. I've got a solution to everything, and I don't want to run up by you. Give the vaccines in one half or one third or one quarter as a preventative measure, and it won't get and do a bunch of small booster shots, and then give chelation therapy to drag out all the heavy metals. And aluminum's a light metal, but it's a metal. So I'm going to stay on the line in case you have a question, but I want to make sure and run by both my prevention and my cure by you.
What do you think about EDTA to chelation therapy?
So it's interesting. I chelation is tricky, and here's why. When you add a chelator, it's going to mobilize these metals that are sometimes tightly bound and sequestered.
Uh-huh.
And so, and I know this for a fact with one of my own kids. So I had a child who was looking almost slightly possibly autistic-like, right? I mean, nobody was home. He was like 5 or 6 at the time. just not doing well. And I thought, well, there was a way to analyze for heavy metals in the body by giving a DSMA challenge. So that's a chelator. So I gave him a dose, and then I was collecting his urine. And oh my goodness, for several weeks, he was really gone. Like, it was very clear that we had mobilized, just in that one large dose,
yeah,
mobilized a lot of those heavy metals, and it was causing further harm. And that's the challenge with chelation. But I'm not against chelation, but boy, if you do it, you better be in the hands of somebody who really knows what they're doing.
Well, that's an interesting take. You really can't do it at home, can you?
No, well, there's gentle ways with topical applications sometimes that maybe you could get away with that way, but I really think chelation should only be done with guidance from somebody who really knows what they're doing.
It's Dee Dee's turn in Corvallis, Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Hi, Dr. Thomas.
Hi, Dee Dee.
Have you been to Oregon State University here in Corvallis?
I've been by there.
Right. Okay, so Corvallis is a small city, but it's got a large student population. And
sure.
My question is, last year, and I don't want to misspeak the disease, but I think it was meningitis or something, the dorms, you know, I've heard
death.
This happening on other college campuses, but, you know,
yes,
there was some meningitis or some outbreak in the dorms,
yep,
and they were giving the students vaccinations for free. And I thought, well, you know, they're out in the community. It's like a, you know, popular coffee house that I go to usually, you know, is all filled with students. And I'm just wondering, is there safety for people like me, the community at large? I mean, do I need to get vaccinated with something like that if there's a lot of students around? I guess that's...
Gotcha. So what you're talking about is meningococcal type B. So in Oregon, we're here in Oregon, we have about 4 million people. And the rate of meningococcal type B deaths is about 1 in a million to 1 in every 2 million. So we have 1 or 2 deaths per year.
Is that the national average?
And that is about the national average,
yeah,
for that. It's a very, very rare death rate, a very rare disease. We used to, until just a few years ago, there was no vaccine for type B. We had meningococcal A, C, Y, and W, all in a vaccine called Menacra or Menvio, and those were fairly effective. But in Oregon, more than 50% of our meningococcus is type B. So they now have a couple vaccines for type B. One's Trememba, the other's Bexsero, and that's what they've been using on the college campuses that have outbreaks. This is not a disease that you're going to catch going into the coffee shop. It's basically the reason it's most common on college campuses is, you know, there's kissing and stuff going on, a little more intimate,
mm-hmm,
contact. I'm not saying it's impossible to get it other ways, but pretty much I wouldn't worry too much, both because it's very rare and also because you're not in a lot of intimate contact with these students.
Don in Kent, Ohio. Take it away, Donald.
Oh, Brother George, thank you so much. Great program. You guys are doing tremendous service to the nation. You gotta be commended. You know, growing up Roman Catholic, we have a great respect for life. You know, we're anti-abortion. But I heard of monkey kidney cells, that's SV40, along with aborted fetal embryo, the fibroblastic cells are used to grow the vaccines. I never raised my kids as cannibals. And also, Big Pharma Wordsmith has decided to change mercury to a thimera cell to try to disguise their efforts. What say you?
Wow.
Yeah, so I actually am suspicious that the vaccines that contain all these various things like the SV40 and the embryo fetal
monkey
cells,
viruses and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, a lot of these vaccines do contain contaminants. I know the rotavirus, for example, one brand had a pig virus in it, the other one had a monkey virus in it, and they can't get those viruses out of the vaccine supply. And then you wonder why the immune systems of people who are injected with these things go all crazy, right? So, yeah, I'm not a fan of vaccines that are so just contaminated, right? If we could have a safe, pure, you know, antigen that's just, you know, I don't know, what do you say? You take a virus and you just change it in a way that it's not going to cause the disease, but it's going to stimulate the immune system, and you don't put a bunch of other junk in there. that might be nice, but we don't have those kind of pure vaccines.
Before the break, you were talking about, you know, a simple solution, eat better.
Yes. So what it takes to be healthy. Oh, and by the way, because I know we're almost done, and I want to let your listeners know, I have a huge YouTube channel, almost a million subscribers.
Oh, how do you find that? Just with your name?
Paul Thomas, M.D.
Paul Thomas, M.D. Okay,
just
great.
Today, I put up a video about this whole measles thing. It's worth looking at it, because my producer called it a rant, but I watched it over, and it was like, no, I was on point. So anyway, but I wanted to tell the listeners, here's what it takes to be healthy. It takes a balanced immune system, and you don't balance immune systems with vaccines. Vaccines actually trigger you to have more allergies and autoimmunity. You balance your immune system by eating healthy, supplementing with vitamin D or getting sunshine, because we're all deficient in that, reducing stress in all forms, getting adequate sleep and exercise, and having a really good environment, internal and external. So your internal environment's your biome. That's the probiotics, the healthy bacteria, the fermented food. And your external environment is the stress of the people around you, et cetera. When you get all that balanced, you can have a nice, balanced immune system, and you can handle all these diseases that we're so scared of. Remember, vaccines only cover 12 to 14 diseases. There's hundreds of them out there. So you're not solving the problem by just targeting a few things. And in fact, most of the things we're now targeting have changed so much that the vaccine is now targeting the wrong thing. Pertussis has shifted. Prevnar for pneumococcus, it's shifted. Polio is gone, but we're still vaccinating.
Yep.
Things like that. We're just not even keeping up, but because they're mandated and it's mandated profit, pharma has no incentive to change and try to get better vaccines that are actually targeting what's going on in the community.
Let's try to squeeze a call or two in. JB's with us in Pensacola, Florida. Hi, JB, go ahead.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Dr. Thomas.
Hi there.
Good evening.
I just want to put a slant on the opioids. I currently take oxycodone, 30 milligrams, up to four times a day, depending on need. I had a BTK amputation about 2 years ago, and I've got a lot of phantom pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, so, but not every person that takes opioids is going to be an addict. It's going to be like the crazy pianist in Reefer Madness or anything like that. A lot of us are just totally normal. It doesn't even affect me as to getting high off of it, and I only take what I need.
You're one of the smart ones.
Yep. Well, no, that's a good point. And when you have real pain and you take the right amount, it just lessens the pain. You don't get euphoric. You don't get high. That's appropriate use of opioids, absolutely.
You don't keep popping them and popping them and popping
them. Just, you know, I think for a lot of people maybe who are prone to addictions, there's lots of people who aren't, and it sounds like you're not. But for people who are prone to addictions, it's a slippery slope because a little bit you feel better, a little more you feel more better, and then you're into the euphoria. And, you know, you can see how a person could get in trouble with them.
Paul, I hear that some people are using Xanax. They're chopping it up and snorting it.
Oh, that's a trick for lots of different medications. Kids will snort their Adderall, their stimulants for ADD, ADHD. People are, snorting just about anything.
Now, let me ask you the question. At what point does the doctor have a responsibility? You know, if you're gonna prescribe a painkiller, a Vicodin, for example, you give just a few of them, right? Not a bottle of 175 capsules.
Right. So doctors have been a huge piece of the problem. So many of my patients in my opioid addiction clinic started off with a dental extraction, given too many opioids. They loved the effect. They started getting refills and complaining of pain so they could get more refills, and then pretty soon they're dependent. Initially, you're not addicted. You just become physically dependent. But then even then, the withdrawal is so uncomfortable, they start seeking other ways of finding these drugs. And, of course, heroin now is so cheap that most people are converting over to that.
Well, and some of the heroin, as you said earlier, laced with fentanyl, which could kill you in an instant.
Oh, it's tragic. I think the numbers each year are going to get even worse. It's scary.
Paul, if you ever need us, you know where to find us, okay?
All right, thank you.
Dr. Paul Thomas, his works, his books, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, of course. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about precognition, synchronicity, and get ready for one heck of a coast-to-coast ride right here on Coast to Coast AM.